This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick, filling in for John Hockenberry today. Well, more on that story now about sex abuse at the Boy Scouts of America. At least 14,000 pages of documents released by the Boy Scouts. This was a secret information trove held by the organization. But following a lengthy court battle, the ineligible volunteer files, as they're called, have now been made public. They've also been referred to as perversion files, as these documents list over 1,200 suspected child molesters, both within the organization over the years and in the communities where the Boy Scouts had active troops. They date back several decades, and in fact, these files end at 1985. They were originally assembled as a way to keep track of potentially dangerous individuals who the organization considered ineligible to volunteer with the Boy Scouts. But in the end, the original intent of these files appears to have been compromised and sullied by what wasn't in the files and really what actions in some cases were not taken as a result of the information that's in them. Well, Christian Fodenwenzel is a reporter and producer for our affiliate station, Oregon Public Broadcasting. He's been on this story and joins us from Portland now. Hello, Christian.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us. Well, let's start with what we know about what's in the files. At least 14,000 pages, as I mentioned, but give us an idea of what's contained therein.
Yeah, basically these files go between 1965 and 1985. And imagine yourself, you're volunteering in a scout troop and you see something odd, you go and tell one of the leaders, okay. So the leader then fills in some information, sends it back to head office and says, this person we're a bit worried about. Now, it could be the person's name is in the paper and they've been accused or they've actually been found guilty of something sexual, then the national office writes back and says, okay, fine, we'll put this person on the file. It could be a family member who's had somebody tell them something suspicious or something that happened on a scouting trip. And each time head office will say, okay, yes, we'll put them in the files. It could be a police report, those kind of things. That's what's in the file. So there's 1,200 files, and some of them are just 3 pages long, 4 pages long. Others, 50 pages long, that kind of thing, are give and take over years of these kind of what's really stunning is that some of these we've heard people get accused and found guilty, but then be allowed to come back and be under probation and still be around kids.
And that's sort of the point of this. The Boy Scouts of America says that in many, many cases, this system allowed them to keep dangerous people or potentially dangerous people away from kids. In other cases, it seems there was an arbitrary system of probation. And in some cases, what to my eyes looked like cover-ups of people's reputations.
Yeah, I can see why you would think that, and I think it's kind of true. But what you're dealing with people in local scout troops, perhaps back in the 60s and 70s, weren't that savvy about what child abuse was. It wasn't really talked about in those days. And there is this kind of pattern when you read the files of somebody kind of forgiving somebody and saying, well, that they maybe acted a bit odd. Let's keep this going. There was one guy saying, if the pot don't stink, don't stir it. And wanted to just keep this person still in the scouts.
Let me read from a statement that we got from Boy Scouts of America. It's long, and I'll read only a brief part of it. Experts have found that BSA's system of ineligible volunteer files functions well to help protect scouts by denying entry to potentially dangerous individuals. Scouting believes they play an important role in our comprehensive youth protection system. You can read the rest of this statement on our website at thetakeaway.org, and it is lengthy. Kristen Fodenwenzel from OPB, before we let you go, as you said, these files end at 1985. There are other files, we understand it, that go all the way till 2010 that have not been released.
Absolutely. There's a court case currently going on in Texas, similar as to these files. So they came out because there was a court case, one particular individual that was suing, and the scouts brought the files and put them in a jury room, and the jury was allowed to look through them. Now, those files were only 65 to 85. And now in this next case in Texas, these files go up to actually 2011. And as you can imagine, those cases are a lot fresher. And you can actually go and maybe if those were made public, there would be more suing, more lawsuits, more criminal investigations.
Yeah.
A lot of the investigations in this case, the statute of limitations has run out on them. So, yes, those will, judges already said they have to be shown But the scouts are appealing that, I think, and so we'll see whether those files come out later.
And there may be a lot more to know on this story. That's Christian Foden-Wenzel, reporter for Oregon Public Broadcasting, who has pored through 14,000 pages or more of essentially sex abuse files at the Boy Scouts of America. Christian, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Todd Zwillick. This is The Takeaway. Well, up until now, clinical psychologist Gary Schoner was the only person outside of the Boy Scouts who was allowed to read the perversion files. He testified on behalf of plaintiffs in the 2010 landmark sex abuse case against the Boy Scouts. In Gary's opinion, the files, while well-intentioned, are completely damning. And he joins us now, Dr. Gary Schoner. Hi, Gary.
Hi. Pleased to be here.
Thanks for joining us. Now, well-intentioned is what I said. Tell us about how the files are well-intentioned in your view.
The purpose of the files was to keep an eye not only on abuse in the Boy Scouts, but abuse in the community, so as to actually identify people that the Boy Scouts would not want as volunteers or as staff members. So the theory was if they had this whole long list of bad people, in effect, most of them would be people that engage in sexual abuse, you could catch them when they applied to volunteer, and you would then prevent yourself from taking on board someone who, at least by that time, was identified as a pedophile or bad for boys.
And the system was very detailed, identifying people by hair color, eye color, identifying characteristics. It seemed to be very, very serious, but my question then becomes, you know, they created this system that you described with a well-intentioned program of dealing with a problem and protecting kids. Is that what they ended up doing, or did they wind up, the scouts, protecting themselves?
Well, I think it was intended to protect kids and probably in some instances prevented someone from re-enrolling or becoming a volunteer. So I'm sure in some instances it did offer protection. The problem was, for all of those years, they had this data which really could tell them how to educate kids and parents and how to do certain types of prevention, which they didn't do till many, many years later.
And why? To protect themselves from embarrassment? I mean, one has to have their mind go to self-protection that went on for decades, generation in the Catholic Church. There's no way to avoid thinking about that.
Yes, that was a piece of it. It was not only that. There was also this tendency to protect offenders or the accused offender, worrying about their reputation, worrying about what others would think. So it was also a misguided attempt to keep a privacy that he shouldn't have been keeping.
And worrying about defamation lawsuits from people being accused in public of being pedophiles. I read that too. Well, you read through these files, thousands of them. Give us a sense of the kind of information that's included in them, aside from the things I mentioned, just identifying characteristics. There's a whole lot more.
Well, when there was a case, it tracked what was known about it, and that could include you being able to follow how the scouts handled a case. And some of the cases were cases where the scout leader was put on probation. The only problem was there was no definition of that. So you could say, well, this isn't that serious. We'll put him on probation. Two problems. First, there was no rule about that. Secondly, nobody knew about it. It was like, if you've seen the film Animal House, double secret probation. What good is it if nobody knows? And then the third thing was that if the local troop believed that the person, in effect, was okay now, they could reinstate them and even destroy the file. For example, a scoutmaster taking boys off and showing them pornography might end you up on probation in one troop, maybe not in another.
So there was a lack of consistency there. And there are cases that you mentioned, probation. There are cases where people are deemed cured and then allowed back in proximity to the kids as scout leaders or volunteers. Was the idea of people being cured and allowed back in a measure of naivete of the time psychologically that people can be cured and it's okay to have them back around kids? Or was that a bit of self-delusion, maybe the scouts pretending themselves that they didn't have a problem that they did have?
I think it was essentially predominantly naivete. Just
thinking that cures were possible.
Yes, or more importantly, they didn't evaluate the case in the first place. Two ways. First of all, they didn't have the guy evaluated by anybody. Number, this was like a, someone in scouting deciding he could be fixed. This is very similar to the Penn State case in that regard. The second thing is that they didn't investigate. So let us say, and in fact, in the Oregon case, what happened was a couple of kids came forward. The guy was actually in that case taken by a Mormon bishop to the police, but they didn't investigate the troop to see if there were other cases. So what happens is maybe you have one case that comes in, and what you don't know, there are 12 victims because it wasn't really investigated. And that was the problem.
Gary Schoner, you were a Boy Scout, correct?
Yes, I was.
This, your involvement in this case and reading these thousands of pages and documents and testifying has to have changed your view of your experience in the Boy Scouts.
Well, it didn't change my view of my experience, but it certainly troubled me. Look, I'm from generations of Boy Scouts, and my son was in scouting, and it was very troubling. I acted as an expert for the Boy Scouts about 10 years ago in a case, in fact, in a case which they won. And at the time, although I was a defense expert, I had no idea there were such things as the IV files, nor did anyone else. So it was troubling to me. I stayed up a couple of nights rethinking my testimony, asking myself, my God, if I had known about these back then, would I have given the same testimony? I did conclude that in that case I would have, but only because the specific issues in the case in Oregon didn't come up.
And if you had known about these cases when your own boys were entering Boy Scouts now, would you let them go?
Well, I was a volunteer and very active myself, so one of the ultimate safeguards was already there. And I also was the person who slept in the tent alone with my son, which is still permissible. That's the only time you can be alone with a kid is if it's your own kid. So that wouldn't have changed that. But had I known what I know now, of course, I would have never missed a trip.
And so many other parents do not have the opportunity to be so close to the interaction between their kids and volunteers as you did, Gary Schoner. Gary Schoner is a licensed psychologist in Minneapolis, Minnesota, who testified on behalf of the plaintiffs in this landmark 2010 sex abuse case against the Boy Scouts of America and has read the files in question. Dr. Schoner, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, you've already started sharing your responses to this story. Here's Eric calling us from Texas.
Regarding the Boy Scout problems, perpetrators and those who swept it under the carpet ought to be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law.
David from North Miami Beach in Florida gave us a call today. This story sounded to him all too familiar.
Much like the Catholic Church, Penn State football, where there's a hierarchy and people will do anything to say there's not right in it.
Got something to say about this story? I know you're thinking about it. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. You can always post to the website. That's thetakeaway.org.